Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on today's episode, this Tuesday edition, scientists are surprised by new data from the Mars rover. California is seeing a new gold rush of sorts. You may be surprised to find out what it is. That and more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And you can listen to us on the TuneIn app if you'd like to. That's got quite a few people like to listen on that. Lots of great ways to listen to KPCG. And if you're here in the Edmond, Oklahoma City area, 101.3, that's where we are in the dial, the FM dial, as they like to say. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today as well. And a lot of interesting stories to cover on today's program. And the first one, I'm not going to pretend to be a scientist, Grant. I'm not a scientist, but I'm going to try to cover this. Mars, they've got the rover out there. And so the rover has sent back some information, and the scientists are stumped by it. So I'm going to present the information, and the scientists out there, hopefully they stay with me on it. At the very end, it kind of summarizes what's happening with Mars and what they think is going on out there. But so I just want to get that out of the way right away in case a listener is like, I don't think he knows what he's saying. You're right. But I'm going to read this.
This is refreshing honesty.
Yeah.
So rare today.
Just, yeah, come out and just tell you right away. But it is interesting. This is from BGR News. The title of the story is "The Mars Rover Just Sent Back Data That Has Scientists Completely Stumped." They say the Curiosity rover has been cruising around on Mars since late 2012. How come we can't get our cars to run like that? They're not refueling that thing.
I've heard that there are certain types of fuel that would last pretty much forever, but obviously would undermine a whole lot of industries, and so it's not released to the public. Not sure how true that is, but I've definitely heard about it.
It's an urban legend for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a wild digression right at the beginning. The rover's been going around since 2012 out there, they say. So you'd think the scientists would have a pretty good handle on the kind of data it's been sending back by now. However, some of the latest readings the rover has taken are totally contradicting many of the theories scientists have had about Mars, and most notably when and how liquid water existed on its surface. So they know there was water there at some point. At least they think there was. And they weren't sure how it was there, why it was there, and they thought they had a theory about it, or they did have a theory about it, but this new data changes what they're thinking. They say, in order for liquid water to have existed on the surface of the red planet billions of years ago, the conditions would have to have been warm enough, and the models that climate researchers rely on suggest it simply wouldn't have been that warm. So a theory arose that perhaps Mars's atmosphere was so thick with carbon dioxide that the planet was able to remain warm enough to support liquid water thanks to a greenhouse effect. So that was their theory. And they sent the rover out there to confirm it by sampling bedrock from an ancient lake, assuming it would find ample carbonate materials, thereby supporting the greenhouse warming theory. And it didn't turn out that way. They say, we've been particularly struck with the absence of carbonate materials in sedimentary rock the rover has examined. That's according to NASA's Thomas Bristol. He says, it would be really hard to get liquid water even if there were 100 times more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere than what the mineral evidence in the rock tells us. So in short, to summarize it, they say Mars researchers just had their best and brightest theory about how liquid water existed on the planet's surface shot in the foot. Water was there, but how and why are now an even bigger puzzle. And the ever-useful Curiosity rover just gave us yet another thing to scratch our collective heads about. So I think it's interesting. They come up with theories about what they think happened on those planets, and then the evidence says, no, that something else happened. So they have to go back to the drawing board.
It really sounds like they're looking for ways that life could have existed. Obviously, if there is a water source contained there by a greenhouse gas effect, then the next step is that what other life forms might have been out there. We already know that there is no life out there, and so we don't necessarily need to send out a space rover to figure that out.
It's good that they called the rover Curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't call it Answer.
Right. Because they're not getting them.
They're not getting the answers they hope for. But I guess they are getting some answers back. So it's pretty interesting. There's a lot of good write-ups at thetrumpet.com you can get for free on the topic of space and what's going on in space, what has happened in space. It's something that fascinates people all the way back to Star Trek and shows like that. But yet they don't really know the history of what's happened out there. But if you look into the Bible, it does give a lot of good clues. Not that everything exactly maybe is spelled out, but you get a lot of good clues as to what happens. But that's where it gets dicey, because science in the Bible, they don't think that it jives, but it actually does.
Mm-hmm.
True science.
Yeah, a lot of scientists are not big fans of the Bible. And if they have a creationist sort of view, then really they're exiled from their entire community.
Yeah, can you imagine going into like, say, this meeting about the data and say, well, it's interesting if you look at the Bible. What now?
Silly one.
Who's that? Strip him of his credentials. So anyway, there's some good write-ups at thetrumpet.com about the universe. And it's amazing when you look at the Earth and how perfect it is, how well situated it is, the fact that it's alive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's life on it and nothing around it. It does talk quite a bit and does give quite an example of a intelligent creator, and that's the thing that they're always trying to kind of juggle, because the popular theory is creation without a creator.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't really square it.
Yes, and all the different factors that were required for life to even exist on this planet, it's something like billionths or trillionths of 1% probability of all these different factors coming into play that would support life the way it does happen. And maybe that's why it's not the case anywhere else. Obviously, God made all those factors come together, and they wouldn't just come together by chance anywhere else.
Yeah, it would be, you'd have to win the lottery.
Oh, yeah.
Like a trillion times.
Yeah.
For it to work out.
That's pretty much the likelihood. Exactly.
Yeah. Here's a really interesting write-up from the Washington Post. California has a new gold rush, but it's not gold. The new gold rush. Loggers see money growing on millions of dead trees. Massive drought out in California over the last, what has it been, a decade or so? And there are just acres and acres and acres of dead trees. And so they've got to get rid of them before they fall and cause problems. And they want to use them a little bit too. So there's a whole boom out there if you're a logger and you're willing to work pretty hard. They're talking about the drought. They say this ecological tragedy has a silver lining. California is in the middle of a $50 million effort to get rid of tens of thousands of dead trees that threaten roads, power lines, and homes. Loggers from across the country are flocking to the state in search of a huge payday from tree removal companies under contract with the state and a few private firms. They're coming from Iowa, Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania. They tend to be young, people in really good shape, as you'd expect. They have to climb trees, use chainsaws. They're working 6 or 7 days a week. It's been rather fascinating, they say. It's been quite an experience to see all these loggers roaming the woods. And it's interesting because a few years back, there was that big sort of gold rush, if you will, up in the Dakotas because of the oil sands, I guess. And then now it seems like there's another pocket happening in California, this time with dead trees. It's almost like, you know, if you're young and you're willing to work really hard and you're kind of smart about it, you could just kind of roam around and
yeah.
I don't know that anybody would want to do that. The other issue is if you go to a place where you can make a lot of money, everything goes up in cost because people need places to stay. And so all of a sudden that, you know, that the cheaper place that would normally rent for not much is renting for a lot. So you do end up spending more money too, but it's interesting. So if people are willing to work, if they have some knowledge, and they're not afraid of a little bit of danger, because it's a dangerous business, you can make some good money out in California.
Right. Actually, I had a weird dream last night about being a logger, and also whenever I heard about the Dakotas rush, that was intriguing to me as well. Maybe that would be right up my alley. just kind of following whatever the latest obviously necessary job is, a job where they need a lot of workers in a short amount of time, and obviously they pay pretty well.
Yeah.
And if you got something like a camper, you could just live in that thing and not have to pay for a really expensive apartment or something like that.
Yeah, it's true. That's a good point. They say some of the places renting out there goes from anywhere from $75 to $800 per night.
Wow.
I'm assuming $800 per night would be you get a bunch of people in there, but I'm not sure.
Hopefully.
They say the jobs are so good and seem so stable that some loggers are uprooting their families and from states such as Oregon and Georgia and relocating to California. And so the real estate agents are enjoying the boom as well. As the number of dead trees grew, so did the tree cutters. They started arriving in a trickle in 2015 when the U.S. Forest Service counted 66 million dead trees. After the mortality skyrocketed to more than 100 million trees, Governor Jerry Brown attached tens of millions of dollars to an emergency order last year, and that's when the loggers started arriving in droves. At least a half dozen public and private agencies are offering money to clear them away to be used as biofuel or as chips for emergency off-ramps that help slow runaway trucks. So there's a lot of money that's being allocated for people that are willing to go out there. You can go down, if you want to go out there and take a tree down, some places you get $1,000 per tree. And then I suppose you got to remove it, you know, get rid of it entirely. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that you'd probably hook up with a bigger company or something. But if you had a couple of buddies and you knew what you were doing because it's dangerous work, can you imagine that? I mean, the incentive to work hard knowing I'm going to get $1,000 for every tree I knock down.
Right.
Boy, yeah, oh boy. That would get you going.
Yeah, that sounds like a really appealing sort of a job. But obviously, a lot of people might shy away from that because that is actually really hard work as well.
Yeah, it is. And dangerous. The California Department of Transportation, they've allocated $11 million to slice away massive trees. And keep in mind, these are big trees. They're not like, you know, the little
100
ones.
Million of them, too. Yeah. That's, talk about job security.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long time to cut all those down.
It is. But they want those roads cut away before they keel over onto, those trees cut away before they keel over onto key roads in an attempt to keep them from blocking busy traffic headed to and from Yosemite or killing a motorist. Yeah, I mean, you can imagine, right, driving down that road and all of a sudden this giant tree falls over.
That right, would be, right in front of you?
Man.
Straight out of a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be an epic story for a... somebody. How did Grandpa die? Well, he was driving from Yosemite.
It's too soon to talk about.
Yeah. You do drive in some of those areas, and they've got the signs warning of, like, rock slides and things. But, yeah, huge tree. I mean, you'd have to, I guess, be careful. They say as of January, Caltrans has identified nearly 30,000 trees it wanted removed along State Route 41 and 168, and it'll pay you, like I said, up to $1,000 per tree. About 8,000 have been removed so far at the cost of $6.5 million. So those are that would be probably the tougher one because you have to be careful where they fall. Like you got to make sure you don't have it fall onto the road. So, but again, if you know what you're doing, they say the Forest Service is also spending millions of dollars to remove trees. So there's different agencies and groups that are pouring money into this, and two utilities as well because they don't, California Edison and Pacific Gas and Electric, they don't want the trees to fall on houses or electrical lines. It's cheaper for them to pay somebody to remove the trees than to just go out there and keep fixing the lines. But listen to this, though. I mean, it's good in the sense of making a little cash, but the scale of the devastation has shocked Forest Service workers who counted the dead trees and the U.S. Geological Survey scientists. 8 million acres of death, they say, across California mountain forests. 8 million acres. So they've never seen anything like it. And again, these trees are, in some cases, hundreds and hundreds of years old. So you have a pretty good indication of how it's been in the past. They've never seen anything like this. So, you know, it's good for the loggers to go out there and make some money, but it is a disaster, too.
Yeah, obviously caused by drought, I'm guessing, is that's kind of the main cause. Yeah, they are having some pretty serious problems, but apparently some of their, I guess they call those aquifers, filled back up, their big water tanks. It's obviously not enough to save the life of a gigantic tree in a lot of cases. I mean, especially when those trees are so massive, they're going to need, you know, tons and tons of water, literally.
Yeah, if they can get those old ones out of there, I guess you can get some new growth going. And but yeah, it is one of those interesting situations where, with a lot of young guys coming in to do the work, you got problems too. They say they're roaming the woods and drinking and bad stuff going on as well. Which, boy, those two don't mix, right? Logging, chainsaws, and alcohol.
That doesn't sound like a good idea. Maybe they could just wait till they're out of the woods.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this sounds like a reality show waiting to happen.
Yeah, it does.
They already have like that. I think they have a logging one that I've seen. But this would be great. Follow them down to California and taking the dead trees out. And yeah, that would be a popular show. those shows.
Yeah, I've heard that show Ice Road Truckers is actually pretty good, or at least it's really popular. I don't know much about it. But yeah, obviously a dangerous job combined with the people who are just crazy enough to get into that field of work and they're daring enough to go ahead and try it.
Yeah.
That makes for pretty good television.
Yeah, that show is, I've seen a few of those. I think they gave a freebie away on iTunes one time, so I got that one. But yeah, I mean, I did think like, wow, okay, if you were young and you didn't mind a little bit of risk, you could work really hard for a couple of months and you'd be set for the year probably.
Exactly.
I don't know that you'd want to sit around the rest of the time, but I mean, you could just make good money. And then, you know, maybe you do travel. Maybe you do something else. So I don't know. I don't know. But those shows, you know, they are set up too. You know, it's not like, because I think there's one about they're always looking for gold. And I think I've seen one episode on that. But I was talking to somebody who watches it, and they find gold every episode. Like, they're always striking gold. I'm like, well, you wouldn't strike gold every time, right? So it is pretty interesting to see some of those shows. But they're popular. And that's probably the way to capitalize on that work even more, if you can get somebody to do a reality show about you.
Yeah, then you're really set for a really long time, just 1 year.
You got to have some fake drama, though, too. Always arguing about who's going to cut the tree down. And you know, it's always very dramatic right before the commercial break.
Yeah.
Will they die? No, they're okay.
I saw a funny parody video about how a reality TV show is filmed. So it took the real clip. It didn't show any edits at all. Basically, two guys sitting on a couch talking about, you know, what they did the night before. And then after it's cut up, it's like every word is taken out of place. And it's like they sound like they're in a huge fight, and the guy slams the door when he leaves, and the other one's like, well, good riddance. But he was actually talking about something that had happened the night before and not the guy who walked out the door. So there are a bunch of things like that where it was deceptively edited to add drama.
Right.
And it's probably how it is a lot of the time with those reality shows. Obviously, if you're just sitting around a house and that's mainly what the show is, you have to inject some interest into that.
For sure. Yeah, I've always thought that, even about sitcoms. You know, if you showed 30 minutes of somebody's day, it'd be like 30 minutes of them, I don't know, cutting the grass or reading a book or walking around. Not that exciting.
Yeah, it's like every sitcom, they're doing so much, and that's not like any of our lives.
No.
Really. We're not going to the amusement park one day and then, you know, doing whatever else the next day and just having all these crazy activities every single day of our lives.
Every day you have to learn a life lesson and grow from an experience. At least back in the 80s. I think they've changed the sitcoms now. I haven't watched sitcoms in a long, long time. This is an interesting one here. Over in the UK, of course, we've got Mr. Stephen Fleury's over there with the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And one of the branches of Armstrong College over there in Ed Stone. And they might be, I don't know if they're having a hard time getting produce or not. I haven't talked to them. But they say UK supermarkets are running out of produce. Recent flooding and severe storms across the Mediterranean have wreaked havoc on the availability of produce in many grocery stores across the UK. In supermarkets across the country, baskets once teeming with fruits and vegetables are now barren, they say. And as a result of the bad weather, which meteorologists say caused a perfect storm of bad growing conditions, new limits have been imposed on how much fresh produce shoppers can purchase at one time. According to the Telegraph, broccoli and iceberg lettuce are among the most affected greens. The children are rejoicing and the parents are sad.
Wow. So I guess the farmers are not, producing as much for whatever reason. Is there some sort of an issue with that?
I'm not sure exactly, just other than what they say here about the this just bad growing conditions.
So, I guess they're talking about maybe a drought or bad soil, something like that.
Yeah, some severe storms. So they don't get into all the specifics other than just that. But it, like they said, it has caused bad growing conditions over there. And then Tess, I think it's Tesco. Is that what the grocery store over there?
I forget.
I think it's something close to that.
Yeah.
They're having limits on certain things. Like you can only buy one or two of each thing. And I went to that store when I was over in that area, so I can't remember their name, but it was something close to that.
Yeah, anytime there's a limit on a grocery store, that's a pretty bad sign. That's what happens like now in Venezuela when their socialist country is falling apart.
Yeah, it was interesting when we were over in Ireland because we went to the grocery store one afternoon. It's a smaller store than what we have here in the U.S., and we wanted to get some eggs for breakfast, and we went back there, and there were no eggs, and we're like, where's the eggs? They said, well, there'll be more tomorrow morning. Like, they came there every morning, and then they sold out, which is not bad, but in the U.S., you know, you...
Never run out.
You never run
out.
Yeah, exactly. You could go at 2 a.m., you can get eggs. I mean, it's just... I think they had better eggs, but...
Probably.
It was just... I was just a greedy American. I was just confused. What? No eggs? Had to learn the ways.
Yeah. We definitely have a lot of blessings here that we don't realize are not necessarily commonplace until we actually go travel somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've known a few people that have lived in the U.S. most of their lives and they moved to another country. And I think one of the biggest things that they missed was the convenience of things in the U.S. Like, again, you can go any, things are always open. Mm-hmm. There's always something open. You have a 24-hour Walmart. Not that you'd want to use it all that often, but sometimes you might. You can go get whatever you want at any time you want. And that's not the case in some other places.
Right. Whenever I was over in Australia a couple of years ago, one of the people there kind of described phone data plans there as third world, just because there were so many places where the data wouldn't work. There's so many, I don't know, wilderness areas in Australia where your phone doesn't really do much good for you.
Right.
And here it's like 99% of the country you can use your phone in any way at any time.
You know what they should do is if you're in Australia, you know how you look on your phone and you see like how many bars you have typically for your signal. If you're like out of range, I should just put a kangaroo on there. You're like, oh, I'm in the outback. I can't.
He stomped the telephone line.
Yeah. Can't get it. I got the kangaroo. I got half a kangaroo. It's a bad signal out here. Here is a related story. America's best grocery stores in order. Probably should go in reverse order to build the suspense to number one.
Good idea.
Number 10, Piggly Wiggly.
Oh, funny place.
Yeah, Piggly Wiggly. That was big up in Wisconsin. I don't think we have them in Oklahoma.
I saw one here probably like 10 years ago, but haven't seen it in a while, so maybe it doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. Maybe it does. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a lot of these stores are kind of regional. They're in some parts of the country, not in others, but Piggly Wiggly. Number 9, I've never heard of this one. Meijer, I think it is. M-E-I-J-E-R?
Yes, I've heard of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never heard of that one. Here's one that we like in this area, Sprouts Farmers Market. They have good stuff.
They do.
You always bump into people there that you know in town.
It's almost impossible to avoid, actually.
Everybody's at Sprouts. They're buying things. Yeah, I like Sprouts. Kroger. I don't know that we have too many of those around here.
I don't think so.
But I've heard of them. Costco.
Yeah.
That's popular. Again, that's not one we have.
Not really. No. I know there's some people in Florida I know who work there, but I don't know any of around here.
Number 5 is Wegmans, W-E-G-M-A-N-S, Wegmans?
Yeah, vaguely heard of that, but hardly.
Northeastern United States, so it's not around in our area here in Oklahoma. This one's popular. Number 4 is Whole Foods Market. I like Whole Foods. They have come under some flack, or have gotten some flack for maybe selling things at too high of a price. Kind of, you know, stuff you could get. You have to pay attention. You look at things and kind of think, well, everything here is specialty or it's whatever. And then you say, well, actually, I saw that at Walmart and it's about $2 cheaper. Mm-hmm. So not everything, but you do have to kind of look and see. And I always feel like Whole Foods is just an experience. You're going for the culture as much as you are for the food.
That's the same with that Uptown grocery we have around the corner from campus here as well. A lot of the things, they're the same price or they're the same things as you would see other places, but the atmosphere is a lot better.
Yeah, I like that store. You know what's interesting about that store? When you walk into it, they have a painting on the wall, like of a girl riding a bike.
Mm-hmm.
It looks just like my sister.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like uncanny. No, sorry, I take that back. I always get this confused. It's not that. It's the picture next to it. It's an actual picture. It's not the bike picture, but this is a different one.
Okay.
I don't know why I always get those mixed up. But the other picture, that one actually looks like my sister. It's like almost identical.
I need to keep a lookout for that next time I go
totally,
in there.
Totally threw me off when I saw it. I was like, whoa. They go into our family photos, or how did they get that?
Oh, by the way, that place also smells delicious, which is a good idea because they have a bakery in there.
Uptown, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty smart. You go in there, you get hungry while you're shopping, and then obviously you're going to buy more probably.
The bakeries, it smells good, yeah, and then they have sushi. They'll make sushi for you. And at one time, actually, because it's not that far away from where we are here at the KPCG.FM studios, I did go there for lunch one time. Took my wife over there, and we just kind of walked around, said a little this, a little that, sat down. They have a little cafe sort of thing. I thought, this is nice.
Yeah.
And we never did it after that, but
my wife actually suggested it a week ago, so we're probably going to do that too sometime.
Yeah, you just kind of get whatever you feel like, and a lot of people go there for lunch. So
yeah.
Anyway, if you're listening online and you're not close to one of those, I apologize.
Make the trip. It's worth it.
There's something like that in your local area. You know what we're talking about. Number three, I've never heard of this one. These are the best grocery stores in America, Stu Leonard's. No idea. There's only five locations in New York and Connecticut.
Wow.
So that's it's dubbed the Disneyland of dairy stores by the New York Times.
Oh.
So I'm not sure exactly how that works out, but the stores are stocked with a petting zoo, animatronics, and costume characters that entertain customers in addition to grocery items. Well, come on now.
What a volatile mix.
Yeah. How is that only number three on the list? I don't know. I think kids would love it. Adults would be like, all right, just let me get my groceries. You know, you got the guy in the milk costume dancing. You're like, yeah, I see the milk, you know? I don't know. I could see it going a couple of ways.
Yeah, it'd be a hit with the kids, and then the kids would make their parents go back. Yeah. That's how it probably works.
Can we go to Stu Leonard's? Okay. number two, have not heard of this one either, Publix. Publix. They have more than 1,000 stores across the southern U.S., so we should have one, but I've never seen it. It's the largest regional grocery chain in the U.S. It's employee-owned and prides itself on exceptional customer service. Shoppers can special order items not regularly carried, and the store has its own organics label called Greenwise. So, that must be somewhere around here, but I haven't seen it. And number one, Trader Joe's.
Wow.
We have a Trader Joe's.
They did it.
They made it all the way to the top. They have more than 400 stores nationwide, concentrated in Southern California, where the store is headquartered. The first Trader Joe's I went to was in Southern California.
Oh, okay.
So I started out right at the fountain.
Well, that's where we got our peanut butter cups from our loyal listener as
well. Yeah, they were delicious. And I gained 14 pounds from eating those. But
finished off in one day.
I've since lost 10 of those. So I'm four in the negative. So anyway, those are some of the top grocery stores in America. And I don't know if they're all open 24/7, but a lot of them are. It's you know, here in Oklahoma, you can't buy alcohol in grocery stores if it's over a certain level of alcohol content. And so it's always funny when I go back to, say, Wisconsin or some other place where they have like basically a full liquor store in every grocery store. I always feel like, what are we doing? This isn't right. But it's very common in a lot of places.
That's actually a pretty contentious voting issue in Oklahoma because apparently our alcohol laws are pretty far behind everyone else's, where, like you said, they can go to one store and get everything. We have to go to one store and then stop by the liquor store as well, make more than one trip.
Yeah. They are always kind of debating whether to change that, but I'm not sure why. I've heard some theories as to why it's that way here, but anyway, it is a little different. Here's a pretty nice story. Yeah, we've had some stories in the past about dogs, pit bulls, bad ones. But dogs can be pretty nice. Man's best friend in a lot of cases. This is from AOL. A woman credits a neighbor's dog with saving her life. She had a stroke last month. Marcia Allen, she was in her backyard January the 17th, and she suddenly collapsed, unable to get back up or yell for help. And the neighbor's dog, his name is Mac. He's a black lab. He is pretty quiet, usually doesn't bark. He started going crazy. He was just outside just for a little bit, and he saw her, and he just started barking and barking and barking, and he wouldn't stop. And the neighbor came out and was like, this is unusual for the dog to be barking and to be so frantic like that. So the neighbor came out and went out and saw that his neighbor had, she had collapsed. Called the medics, got her to the hospital. She's on the mend, and all thanks to the dog. Not even her dog, but he knew there was trouble and he alerted somebody. That's pretty cool.
I think that shows the importance of training a dog, too, because some dogs, they bark at everything for no reason. You know, a truck drives by, they're still in the dog's still in the backyard and is barking at the truck that's driving past.
Yeah.
And so if that dog were doing that all the time, the owner probably wouldn't have even come out, or he would have just yelled out the door to be quiet, and that woman probably would have died.
Yeah, so that's an amazing example. There are a lot of examples like that where dogs do protect their owners, and in this case, just somebody that needed help. Yeah, dogs do bark. And boy, we were walking around the neighborhood, I think it was last night even, my wife and I, and one dog starts barking. And then the next one, and the whole neighborhood is barking. And I sort of felt bad, but I'm like, well, you know, we do this all the time. You see us all the time, guys. And I can never tell with the dogs because they always run up to their fences and they look at me. And I don't know if they want to kill me or they want to play. Like, some want to play. Yeah. And so we actually, the other day, the whole family was taking a walk around the neighborhood. And one of our neighbors, he has a dog, and usually it's behind a fence, but he was out. And a little bigger dog, but he's a pretty good guy, looks like. And he likes to play fetch. You always see the neighbor throwing sticks, and he goes and gets it. And he had the biggest stick in his mouth. It was huge. And he ran at us full speed. He wanted to play. And he like, was hitting me with the stick and wanted me to throw it. And I was just like, I don't know. And the neighbor is out there, and he called him over. He's like, oh, sorry about that. I said, no problem. But that guy was eager. He didn't care. He's like, who wants to throw this giant? And it was huge. It was like a tree branch he had picked up in the front yard. He wanted me to chuck the stick. So I probably should have, but I didn't know. I was like, well, I don't want to get involved with this dog's stick throwing training.
Right. He'll expect it every time if you do it once.
You see it in their eyes. Sometimes they're just like, oh, I want to play. Don't you want to play with me? But I'm not good at determining whether they want to play or they just want to attack. I'm not good at that.
I'm not either. That's why they kind of make me a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's all about, well, you grew up with a dog though.
Yeah, but I've never been close to animals because I was always allergic to them.
Oh, okay.
And so I kept them away from me. So even our own pets, I was like, well, you can go over there.
Are you allergic to dogs?
Yes. Well, it's mainly if I touch the dog or wherever they've been sitting a lot, and then I touch my face. If I touch I have to be very careful not to touch my face. And the other thing is, if it's a really crowded location where dogs and cats are a lot, then it gets really stuffy for me and I have a harder time breathing.
And that's so you get congestion,
so,
sort of.
There's a couple conditions to it where I could avoid it, but there's also a lot of ways where it does bother me.
Huh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is a big thing for a lot of people. This is a really interesting story. Of course, this one happened in Texas. All the strange things seem to happen in Texas, yet it's one of the happiest states in America.
It's a pretty amazing place.
Yeah. I meant to ask you. So when you went to Texas recently, were you happier when you crossed the state line? Because Texas is a very happy state. Oklahoma not as happy, apparently.
Yeah, I think I was pretty happy when I crossed the state line. Nothing against Oklahoma, but just knowing that Texas is a happier place with happier people for some reason made me feel a little bit happier.
According to a survey. That was a survey that we looked at last week. Well, this lady, she had a bee infestation in the walls of her house. So many bees that honey was dripping from the walls.
Sounds like a dream.
Can you imagine that? You look over and you see, I mean, it was dripping down to where it was pooling on the floor. And you think, what is that?
Put some buckets out.
Yeah.
Harvest that.
It's gold. Yeah. Gold pouring out of
it. Liquid gold.
It says when roofers came out to Latanya Levine's house, they made a startling discovery. They discovered there was a bee problem. She said, told me that they couldn't do anything on the roof. They were going to try to fix the roof until something was done with the bees. So we looked at the bees to remove them enough so they could work. The homeowner said professionals were able to close the hole from which the bees were coming, allowing the construction workers to get back to work. But when Levine returned to her two-story house, she realized the situation was worse than imagined, or much better, depending on what you think about honey coming out of your walls. She found honey dripping from the walls. It's a problem she has been dealing with for 3 to 4 days. It's coming in from the ceiling down to the walls, she said. I'm mopping it up, mopping in the walls. It's all over the curtains here. Just honey. They're probably ruined. But you got all this honey. Organic honey. Couldn't you do something? You'd save it, wouldn't you? Put it in a bucket or something.
Yeah, just don't touch the walls and you have free honey for life.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't want to live in a honeycomb, but this is interesting. When Newsfix visited the home, the sweet syrup was found pouring down the walls in thin straight lines and creating sticky puddles on the floor. It's going to other walls and coming through other places, and you can see it's coming through cracks and crevices in the crown moldings, you said. The federal government added honeybees to the National Endangered Species list last year, which I did not know, but I know that they've been diminishing. So killing the insects is out of the question. Can't kill them.
Wow.
There were 50,000 bees taken out of the lady's house, but they didn't get the queen. And if you don't get the queen, they're coming back.
Right.
So this is really interesting. Years ago, we used to go to a summer camp just up the road from where we are here in near Guthrie, Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Christian Camp, I believe it is. And they had old cabins you'd stay at in the woods. And there was one of the cabins had this exact same thing. I don't know if there was honey dripping down the walls, but it was a beehive inside the wall. And on the backside, you could see them flying in and out. And if you were quiet and you just laid there, you'd hear the hum coming through the wall. It was awesome and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, it would be.
So this happens to people. You get a situation where there's a hole and they go in there and they make these huge hives. And what do you do with them? You got to get them out.
That does raise an interesting question, because if bees have invaded your house, it is your property. It should be... Maybe that would be a case where you could possibly get rid of the bees, like just kill the bees. Because if they had, I don't know, if they'd sprayed something, they probably would have killed the queen and gotten rid of the issue. Instead, they're trying to save all the bees. They didn't get the queen, so there's still a problem.
Yeah, I don't know what they did. I would imagine you'd go in and smoke them like they do.
Exactly.
Make them go to sleep and then go in there and try to get them out.
Would that kill them or no?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I think it just makes them, that's what they do. Like if people own hives, they put smoke in there and it just makes them kind of tired or something. So they don't sting you. And then they go, as far as I know, and then you go in there and do what you need to do. And then, of course, they wear the suits. But I wonder what the expense would be to call it like some sort of professional bee removing company. You'd hope that there'd be some sort of help with the payment on it, because you could use the bees. You could put them somewhere.
Right.
And there'd be some value to them, you'd think. So maybe they could just transport them to another spot and go from there. But anyway, pretty interesting story there in Texas.
I wonder where the bee was hiding, or the queen bee. Isn't that thing like a couple inches long at least? Isn't it? It's like several times larger than a regular bee, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, you got to get the queen.
Stealthy queen, even though it's rather large compared to all the other ones that were caught.
Well, they'll do whatever to protect that queen.
Yeah.
They always do. And I think it's sort of the same with ants. We had an ant problem in our yard, fire ants.
Oh.
And they kept making this big, big, you know, mound. And, you know, I'd always drive over them with the lawnmower and they go crazy. But you start worrying because, you know, if your kids go out there, they can cause quite a problem. So eventually we just got some stuff and poured it on there and knocked them out, took care of them.
Yeah.
These, you know, it's these little granules you pour in there and they pick them up and they think it's food. And so they run down there and I'm just watching them like, oh, you stupid, stupid ants. Don't you know you're causing your own demise? Cause they take it down there to the queen.
Yeah.
And it did. It knocked them out.
Wow.
And so we haven't seen them since. So we tried all this, like, you know, natural stuff, and it didn't do anything. It just made them stronger and angrier. So eventually we just had to knock them out. So we did, because you don't want those ants around, especially if you got kids or, you know, or other things. Our neighbors have not a kid. It's not their kid, but it's like a grandson or something. And he came over and was just, he's just playing around. He wasn't supposed to be over there, but he was like playing around the fire ants. So I was like, hey, I don't know, you know, so we had to get rid of him. But
that's like a case of the ants. They're actually working a little too hard in that case. They're just mindlessly harvesting away and actually killing themselves or working themselves to death, basically.
They can't think. They don't. And even the ones that survived the first round, the second round, they went for it again.
Oh.
They just don't learn, those ants. They got the strength of 10 men and the brain of none. It's 10 times. Well, they can lift like 100 times their body weight, right? Something like that. Yeah. Amazing. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. And I want to mention some of the headlines that are at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you check that out today as well. Here are some of the headlines. British naval power after Brexit. That's from Real Clear Defense. Russia's crescent of instability spreads west. That's from Politico. Has China been practicing preemptive missile strikes against U.S. bases? That's War on the Rocks. Backing into World War III from Foreign Policy and the ABCs of Russian military power, a primer for the new administration from National Interest. So there's a great analysis piece, I guess the main story today, about the way the U.K. is trying to not have President Trump come over there calling him racist, et cetera, but they let the leaders from China and other nations come over then. They clearly have some human rights issues in those nations. So there's a good analysis piece there. I believe it's from Richard Palmer. So make sure you stop and check that out today when you're checking out the headlines at thetrumpet.com. Grant, you've got a story for us here from USA Today. The title is What Bannon Shares with ISIL Leader, Our View. What is this story about?
Well, we've really gone deep into the bad high school journalism now because, you know, obviously they're comparing one of Mr. Trump's advisors to a leader of a terrorist caliphate.
Wow.
Pretty extreme, it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they're doing. They say that they both proselytize for their vision of war. The reason they say this about Steve Bannon is because he believes that there is a clash of civilizations, which we also believe that. There is a clash of civilizations going on. We've seen it all over Europe with Muslims versus Christians or Muslims versus the Western culture in general. And that's what we're trying to prevent from coming into the U.S. Yet this writer apparently is in some sort of a fantasy world and can't possibly think of any Muslims as possibly an enemy.
I'm reading this book that's really, really fascinating. I can't remember the author off the top of my head, but he was a columnist for the New York Times and a few other places. And he went over to Afghanistan and that area in Pakistan in like 2008. He had been there when he was younger. He kind of knew the area. He knew he was taking a chance, but he wanted to see if he could get deep into the Taliban country. He gets taken captive. The title of the book is Captive. I'm not to that part of it yet, but he's leading up to it. And he knew the people over there pretty well because he had been there years earlier, knew some of the tribal leaders and things. And it's just interesting to get his take and hear some of the conversations or read them that he had with people where they were, the Taliban telling him like what their philosophy is. And they are not in any way interested in the West, Western values. Their whole thing, at least from, you know, what he says, is they're concerned about the afterlife, which in their mind is they have their version of it and their thought about it. And they don't care, at least a lot of them, the ones in the book, they don't care about trying to get along today or trying to have some sort of peace. They're not interested in that. According to them, they're just interested in war and spreading their beliefs. And then they don't really care what happens in this life, at least they say that. They're concerned about their afterlife. So it's a very strong ideology. Is that every single Muslim? Who knows? But it's a very strong ideology. There's no way that will not clash with Western thinking. It's just different ways of thinking. It has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with anything other than different ideologies. And it's written about in so many places, you have to admit it, at least admit that.
Right. And that's what this person just refuses to do, this writer for USA Today. And the thing is, this writer actually brings out quotes from the two about Islam that are exactly the same. So in a strange way, the two men are actually in agreement, but that should say a lot about the aim of radical Islam, the fact that, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of ISIS, says Islam was never for a day the religion of peace. Islam is the religion of war. Steve Bannon said Islam is not a religion of peace. Islam is a religion of submission. So, yeah, I guess Steve Bannon must be totally insane because he's actually believing what these radical leaders are saying. He's taking them at their word and acknowledging the threat that they are actually saying they will carry out.
Yeah, it's like sort of this, we've had this odd situation with, Iran and the Iran nuclear agreement, where the past administration was trying so hard to work with them and come to some sort of a peace, but and they just from their own mouths keep saying, you know, you're the great Satan, or yeah, the U.S. is a great Satan, we hate Israel, and they just keep telling us all this stuff, and yet we haven't wanted to believe them. And so here when somebody comes along, just from what this piece is saying, and just says, okay, well, this is what they say, I believe what they're saying, that's all of a sudden a problem, according to the journalist. It's not like he's making it up, Bannon. He's just saying what they themselves have said.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that's an issue. If they hadn't said that and he was just throwing out attacks, okay, there might be something to talk about there, but he's just parroting what they already said, according to the ISIS leader, or ISIL, I guess.
Yeah.
I call him ISIS.
ISIL is, that's a liberal term. It kind of says, well, it's kind of hard to explain, but it does actually implicate other nations that are not involved in the ISIS right. caliphate. So it's kind of like lumping in innocent parties into that group, and namely Israel. But actually, this article does bring out a lot of just similar quotes, like I said, about a brewing global war between Islam and Christianity. Both men apparently spin a narrative for their followers of sprawling conflict between believers of the Prophet Muhammad and the followers of Jesus Christ. But that is real, though. That is something that has happened throughout all of history, and it's not going to change now. And it would be one thing if ISIS was just a tiny minority. What people are trying to say is that ISIS does not represent Islam. They are a perversion of a beautiful religion. But the thing is, if you poll all Muslims, about 20% of them at least agree with Sharia law being implemented in any country in which they live. That actually averages out to a couple hundred million Muslims who agree with those types of beliefs that are just fundamentally at odds with Western civilization. We can't coexist with people who think that Sharia law needs to be forced upon us by any means possible.
Yeah, and you see that in different nations, like UK, I guess, primarily, where you have pockets, and people just, they do flock to their own ideologies, and so it doesn't become this big, you know, intricate melting pot where everyone just kind of does their own thing but gets along. People do divide into their own belief systems. So you're like, well, that's that part of town, and this is that part right. of town. And like I said, historically, there has been a clash between Christianity and Islam multiple times, very famously or infamously, and violence on both sides, and fighting on both sides. So it's not a matter of saying, well, one's right, one's wrong, but it's just a matter of recognizing the fact that these two different ways of thinking, they don't mesh. And as much as they want to try to make them mesh, they end up in conflict.
Yeah, and it does end up where the radical left begins to unwittingly support an enemy. They try to say that it's such a tiny minority of Muslims who agree with these things, when in reality it's 100 million, a couple million or more. That's not a tiny minority. That is a lot of potential soldiers of jihad. I mean, that is an obvious threat to all the entire world, not even just the West, but all of civilization, if their end goal is to bring about their imam
yeah.
by violence. That is not necessarily something that is a religion that where people can coexist. Another thing too, ISIS is taking passages out of their own book to inspire what they're doing. That is, you know, that is a religion. They are adhering to their book. That's just reality that a lot of leftists just will not acknowledge. It says, well, there are 3.3 million Muslims in America, and 6,000 of those serve in the U.S. military. There have also been a lot of instances where U.S. soldiers have been killed at their bases by a jihadist.
Yeah, and getting, you know, just, I guess, focusing on this article and what they're saying, we've seen this in the kind of the media in general, is they obviously don't like the current administration, pretty clear. But they're really stirring up a lot of people when they're throwing out some pretty severe accusations, you know, and saying that, a leader is racist, or a leader is as bad as you name the villainous historical figure. It's just such a jump. They may not agree with the policies, and there might be some things to really highlight, but this is just name-calling without any sort of temperance and really thinking through what they're saying. And then it comes from the other side, too. Then the administration's also doing it with the tweets. And it kind of is following on from the election. We saw the same thing where it's just really terrible name-calling on both sides. And instead of just digging down maybe to some of the facts and letting them stand on their own to present a case, just calling somebody a derogatory term, that doesn't help anybody. It just stirs up hatred on both sides. So it's definitely not a unifying factor to write articles like this.
Exactly. The country has become so divided where basically the right will see what the left is doing and say, oh, you agree with that? Well, then I automatically disagree with it. And the left is doing the exact same thing. There is no bipartisan effort anymore, no attempt to even come together. Basically, the battle lines have been drawn. And when you're calling the leader of your country hateful for trying to take precautions about who we let in, on a personal level, on a neighborhood level, on any type of level, we would implement the same actions. We would be careful about who comes in.
Yeah.
That's just common sense. And for some reason, people disagree with that, and yet they're going to insinuate that Mr. Trump is the most evil person ever because of that. That's a pretty big quantum leap.
Yeah, it's not, I don't know. I mean, in journalism, I guess they've always kind of done this a little bit, but usually hopefully you have like a level-headed editor at the top saying, this might be a bit extreme. Like maybe tone down your rhetoric just a touch, but it just seems to get more and more inflamed.
Yeah, and there are not too many humble journalists. They don't have too much to be accountable for, especially the way it is now where different publications or different sources have their own ideology. You can just fall in line with that ideology and then just spout it. No one's holding you accountable because the people at the top agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, it kind of feels, too, like just watching some of the news and reading the headlines. Like, in some cases, they're kind of cheering each other on, like who can come out with the more, inflammatory headline, or who can get the big gotcha story. And it's just not helpful. It's not helping anybody as far as coming together and being unified on something. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not like it's not like they shouldn't point out some things that maybe people should consider, but it's just so far. It's so far gone. I don't know how you even pull it back anymore. If you can't even pull the division and then the news stories and the headlines, if you could even pull it back to some sort of more moderate tone, maybe it's too far gone for that.
We're at the point where simply acknowledging reality makes a person evil. That's why this article is comparing Steve Bannon to the leader of ISIS. That's very extreme. They point to things like how he helped craft Mr. Trump's speech where he said American carnage is taking place. That's what he said in his inaugural address, I believe. Obviously the writer thinks that's a dark and ominous statement. Well, it's reality. If you look at Chicago, you see people just shooting each other by the thousands every year. That's not the number who die necessarily, but thousands get shot in Chicago every year. That is a war zone. Mm-hmm. That's American carnage. Just because you don't agree with the exact terminology, we should all be able to agree on basic things. But now there's two sides. They're both so divided, we can't even agree that American carnage is taking place in this country.
Yeah, the one thing that President Trump has done well, and I think it's why he got elected, is he does point out the problems, and he does call them kind of what they are. And there's a write-up today on CNN about this one town in particular that's really struggling financially, and they voted mostly for Donald Trump. And one of the things they said is, well, they're glad somebody's finally kind of calling it like it is and not sugarcoating things. They've gotten tired of that. And so there's at least half or almost half the country that feels that way. And he may not have any big solutions for them, or he may not have the right path. But President Trump at least has pointed out the problems. They can sugarcoat all they want, but people are killing each other in inner cities here, and you know, ISIS is out to do what they're doing, and you should pay attention to who's coming in. But like you say, just even mentioning that, now all of a sudden you're on the level of a terrible radical terrorist leader or something like that. That's kind of the classic name-calling agenda, though. If you don't agree, just call somebody a name.
Yeah, and the media just completely ignores that two-thirds of Americans right now are in favor of some sort of vetting process or some sort of precaution when it comes to letting immigrants come in. People are sick of people from South America flooding across the southern border, for example. They're a bit concerned by the fact that ISIS has blatantly said they're going to send terrorists across in groups of refugees into America. That's right. A big issue.
Should at least maybe take them at their word and take a look at it.
Apparently that's racism, which I don't know how vetting Muslims is a race issue, but that's what people are trying to say. I mean, these are just two different ideas. People just won't acknowledge reality that Western civilization and radical Islam can't coexist.
That's a write-up from USA Today, what Bannon shares with ISIL leader, Our View. And kind of interesting to see the tone that some of these stories are taking. Make sure you also check out thetrumpet.com today for headlines and analysis pieces. And listen for the Key of David and Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Those are coming your way here in just a bit on KPCG. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Tuesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.